the Ramchal, who started his special group of Talmidim, which were known as the Chavraya Kaddisha, the Holy Chabura. It was basically a group of selected Talmidim who lived up to the expectations and had the same goals that was the Derech of the Ramchal. And as we already mentioned in the past, some of the various takonis, specific takonis that were instituted in this specific chavraya. This was the hanhoge, to be part of that group. Basically, a lot of it was done in secrecy because the idea was not to arouse any uproar or certain controversies. This was a chavrusa or a chavraya that ran betzina, sort of within themselves, self-contained. After about 2 years or so, the way it is usually told of the story, that the Satan saw that this is not poshut. He saw and recognized the great Madregas, this special, very special group, which is spearheaded by the Ramchal, who was the Nish Kodesh Venoira, was the Reish Chachmei Doiroi. And they thought that maybe too much Kedusha, the Satan figure that might spread out into the world, which may cause people to be Moira to Tshuva and be Moira the Gula. Sotan decided to do everything in his power to be able to break that. And what happened was that in the year Tof Pei Tes, which is 1729, the Ramchal goes to the city of Rigio and goes to visit his Rebbe. His Rebbe was Rabbi Ishaya Boson. And at that time, in his hometown in Padua, arrived the Shliach from Yerushalayim. Shimon Shalayim was known as Harav HaChosid HaMekubel. His name was Rabbi Rafal Yisrael Kimchi. Known Mekubel and noted Mekubel from Yerushalayim. And he spent time in the Beis Medrash of the Ramchal. Ramchal was not home at the time. Some of the Talmidim were not that careful, and they showed this guest, knowing that he was a well-known Mekubel. So they showed the Shliach of Yerushalayim some of the Ksavim, some of the writings of the Ramchal. This Mekubel begins to read it, and he became tremendously in his spoil. Ad Kedei Kach decided he's not leaving. He's going to wait as long as it takes. He has to meet this person who wrote, was the author of these Kzveyad. And he waits until the Ramchal comes back to Padua. And as a result, he decides he stays there already because he wants to daven together with him on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. He says, where can be a better place to spend the Yom Noroim? And he saw, in his own words, as he described it, he says, he saw G'doylois v'nefloyes. I just want to quote you. He writes a letter to the Rebbe of the Ramchal, Rabbi Shaya Boson, and writes Bezel Oshin. This is the words of Rabbi Frol Yisrael Kimchi of Yerushalayim. Shom bebeisoi, he says, there in the house shall harav hakodesh hamekubel ha'eloiki. Nimtesi, that's where I found myself, that's where I am. V'shom ho'yisi b'resh ha'shon av Yom Kippurim. V'yoshabti yud beis yoyim bebeisoi. And I spent 12 days in his house, in his home. V'ro'yisi plois. And I saw wonders. Eich hu koisev hakol, first of all, b'loshin zoyar gomor. All of his writings are written with the loshin of a zoyar. Notice, if you look at it, you think you're reading the Zohar. Barisi, I saw Perushai al Koheles, the Gam Sefer Hatikunim, the Gam who Mechaber Sefer Zohar Chodosh al Parshis. Ramchal also wrote, as you will, a second Zohar Kodosh on the Parshis of the Torah, and it's so extensive, he writes, that the Ad Parshas Vayetze, just from Bereshit to Vayetze, Farhoiloi Arba Chiburim, four volumes. Four volumes of writings, he says, just till Parshas Vayetze alone. V'nishtoy mamti al amara. He says, I stood in awe at what I was seeing, what I was witnessing. And then he writes, ube'emes u'dover pele, he says, loiro isri kamoyu, koi divre ho'eved refol Yisrael kimchi. This is what he writes. Similarly, as this happened, so he began to tell people about it. All of a sudden, the townspeople of Padua with themselves, even though the Ramchal was living there, but as we said, the avodah that was done was in secrecy, was done b'tznius, wasn't done in public forum. And now the whole idea, the whole system now became revealed, and the people all of a sudden began to realize, in fact, what the Ramchal stands for to that extent, they didn't know as far. Furthermore, there was a Rav, a well-known Rav from Vilna. His name was Rabbi Yekusiel Gordon. He spent time in Padua, and he came because he wanted to study medicine. Padua had a famous university. So he came. Those days was not uncommon. You could be a Rav, you could be a Talmid Chacham, and at the same time, you know, he studied medicine. We saw many of the great people had these Chachmas. So he went to study medicine, and he comes right away, he comes to Ramchal, and he pleads that he wants to be taken in as a Talmud. The Ramchal should teach him. Specifically, he wants to learn Chachmas or Kabbalah. Ramchal accepted his application, if you will. But before he accepted him, he gave him a number of tikkunim, certain things that he has to do before he becomes eligible to become part of the Chavrai Kedisha, and he teaches him Kabbalah. He becomes one of the most chashuv talmidim of the Ramchal, and he decides he does not want to study medicine anymore. Now he's something else. He turned into a different person. However, the Ramchal, interestingly enough, did not let him stop. Because he says that he received, Ramchal said, the instructions of the Magid that he had, Min HaShemayim, that he should continue. That there's a purpose, there's a tafkid that he should study medicine. So he didn't let him stop, and he said, you continue to study medicine, and so on. This shliach, this Yerushalmi shliach, this Rafal Yisrael Kimchi, he makes his way to Venice, major, major Jewish populace, and he tells the people also, mamish, in good faith, about the tremendous deploys that he saw by the Ramchal. Becomes a big rash over there as well, to hear the things that he repeated, and also between the Bnei Yeshiva in Venice, and this Rabbi Kasil. Mamish, was Yotza Mikhailim, Arosa Mikhailim, literally, Yotza Mikhailov, and he writes two letters. He writes one letter, he writes to a great guy in Rabbi Yeshua Heschel, with the Av Bezna of Vilna, and then he writes another letter to somebody, Remot Chiyofa, not the Levush, but a very, very influential person in Vienna, and he writes all of the, with the Arichas, about the Madregas of the Ramchal that he saw. Now that this is becoming public, so what happens? Maisa Sotan Sliach, as you say, Maisa Sotan Sliach, that this became known to one of the greatest Loichmim, if you will, one of the greatest and the fiercest fighters of the time against anything that smelled or was suspicious of Shabtai Tzvi, that was someone by the name of Rabbi Moshe Chagiz. Everybody knows Rabbi Yankiv Emden with Rabbi Yonchan Eibshitz, who suspected Rabbi Yankiv Emden, suspected Rabbi Yonchan Eibshitz of being a secret follower, you know, of Shabtai Tzvi. This Rabbi Moshe Chagiz was equally or violent and very, very fierce, very, very fierce, stopped him with nothing, full of energy. He was one of the great Chachmei Sfar from the Sfarische Gedolim, who lived there in Eretz Yisrael. He lived in Tzfas, lived in Yerushalayim, and he made his way to Italy, and there he found a lot of room for Kanoyas over there, and this was the next one that he tried to pick on. Before that, his campaign was very strongly against, by the way, Rabbi Yonchan Eibshitz. He was also, not only Bianca Vem, he also was one of the greatest, if you will, fiercest opponents of Rabbi Yonchan Eibshitz. And now, he took on this campaign against Ramchal. This was really, if you want to say an arch enemy that Ramchal had, who really caused the most damage in terms of to the Ramchal, in terms of his personal life and everything, disruption, this is the Moshe Chagiz. Moshe Chagiz was the son of the Halachas Ketanis. His father was the Halachas Ketanis, and as a matter of fact, the Halachas Ketanis has brought down many Halachas by the Mishnah Berurah himself, brings down, he writes, Hey, Lamed Kuftes. Rosh HaTevis is, if you ever seen the Mishnah Berurah, it's Halachas Ketanis. That's the father of Moshe Chagiz. And he goes, and whatever you try, Ramchal writes very nice, edel letters to try to show, listen, you're making a mistake, we have nothing to do with this, did not want to accept it, Bechlal, nothing. Atka dekach, because he was so suspicious, he wouldn't believe anybody, Moshe Chagiz. When it came to Yonchan Eibshitz, when Yonchan Eibshitz became suspected, in order to be Yonchan Eibshitz, he took all the Rabbonim in Prague, it was Erev Yom Kippur, 1726, and he puts in Cherem publicly anyone as a Shaykh of the Shabtai Tzvi. That should show clearly that he's against them, because he put everyone in Cherem. He wasn't like this, this is just for show, he doesn't really mean it, and this is not his true beliefs. He really secretly is a believer and a follower. This was the opinion of Moshe Chagiz, and Bianca Vemden also, against Rabbi Yonchan Eibshitz. So this Lamaisa became a very, very serious machlokes. Rabbi Moshe Chagiz at the time lived in Germany, because since then he lived many places. He lived in Italy, he lived in Livorno, he lives in Amsterdam. There he has another parsha that was in Nehemiah Chiyun, and then they kicked him out because the Rav of Amsterdam from the Chachmei Asfar was Rabbi Shlomo Alayon, who was a supporter at that time of Nehemiah Chiyun, because he had a lot of talent. Nehemiah Chiyun, we spoke about him already. And anyway, so in Germany, he solicits the help of the previous Rav. The previous Rav before Rabbi Yonchan Eibshitz was a Rav by the name of Rabbi Cheskel Katzenelnbogen. Cheskel Katzenelnbogen was the Knesset Yecheskel. It was a Goyen Hador of the time. And matter of fact, none of them knew the Ramchal face to face. No one ever saw him. But based upon the coaxing of Moshe Chagiz, Cheskel Katzenelblom took on the case, and so on. They started writing letters over the entire world, and the fire of the Machlokes began to spread all over. And this was the beginning of the various serious problems of Ramchal. So for now, let's just leave that. We're going to continue here where we stopped, and we're going to finish Mezuz Hashem now, Perigimel, and this is Holoma Zedoyme Legan HaMavuka. Holoma Zedoyme Legan HaMavuka. Let me just mention, just that what Ramchal tells us, basically in Perigimel, which is, again, this is a Hemshech, this is Bibir Chelke HaZehirus, vigilance. Ramchal cannot say it enough that the obligation of every Yid is to live his life with his boininess, to make sure that you think before you act, evaluate everything that you do, whether it's the right thing to do or not the right thing to do. As a matter of fact, Ramchal said that there are two things. The first thing is first to define, have your definitions correct. Make sure that you know what is toiv and what is ra, because that itself is something that needs to be studied. To know exactly what is toiv and what is ra, because he points out, because you don't study, the sotan and stuff can blind you. The sotan can blind you, he says, on two levels. A, he says it can blind you that you don't see anything, you don't even know what's happening. And what's even worse, he says, when he does allow you to see, that he blinds you in the sense that he confuses you, that you think you see one thing, and matter-of-factly, you're seeing something else. You see a pillar, and you're imagining you're seeing a person, or you're seeing a person, and in fact, it is a pillar, and so on and so forth. So a person has to basically be clear what he's seeing. You have to define what your values are. You have to know what is toiv and what is ra. That's number one. The second thing is, whatever you do, you have to now measure it against your definition. Once you have your definitions straight, you know what is toiv and what is ra, what is good and what is bad, what is toiv, as opposed to what is evil. So now you have to measure your actions, your ma'asim, your deeds, to see if it fits in with what you believe it to be good, or otherwise, which is to be ra. And he brought out that one of the basic things to be able to overcome, let's say I know what's good, but I'm tempted to do the wrong thing. So he brings down what Chazal said, Boyu v'nachshev cheshboini shaloylam, that a person basically should make always a cheshbon. What you stand to gain, if you follow the derech ha-Torah, if you follow the path of the Torah, what you stand to lose. As Chazal say, that a person should be mechashev hefsed mitzvah keneged tzchora. Always make a cheshbon. You think that if you do a mitzvah, you might lose, but then think the other way. But if you do the mitzvah, how much more are you going to gain on the other side? So then maybe on one side, you think that you're losing in your material world, but on the other end, you realize there's no match to whether it's to gain. So the hefsed mitzvah, what the mitzvah might, you believe that the mitzvah might cause you to lose, but put it against the schar that you stand to gain if you do the mitzvah. Just to mention just one nekuda, if you're doing these types of calculations to try to figure out, you know, the schar of the mitzvah, it's very difficult to figure out the schar of the mitzvah, because it says in Pirkei Avos, it says, have a zoyer b'mitzvah kala kebachamura, make sure you do even the lightest mitzvahs, right, as with the same fervor as you would do the more serious mitzvahs, because you don't know the schar of mitzvahs. The truth is you don't know. We don't know. The truth is we have no idea even what the schar of mitzvahs is. According to some opinions, this may not make us too happy, but the good news is not everybody goes along with this opinion, but the opinion of the Hafloh is, the Rebbe Chassam Sofer, he says, based upon, you know, a well-known Gemara in Chum Daf Pei Zayin, the Gemara says, it was a ma'isa be'echot. It's a ma'isa of an individual shishochat, that he shechted. Now we know that shechita, if you shecht oif, if you shecht the bird, is the mitzvah of kisu adam, that you have to cover the blood. The mitzvah says in the Torah that you have to cover the blood, you have to take some earth, right, and cover it. So the Gemara tells a story about someone who shechted. However, before he managed to be Mekayim Kisadam, somebody else came and he preempted him. So he actually, if you want to say it, he robbed them of his mitzvah. The Shoichet, the one who shechted, right, he would have first choice for the mitzvah. It's his mitzvah. Yet someone came, Bekodam Chaveroi V'Kisas Adam. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Gamliel penalized, let's call him, the one who grabbed the mitzvah, that he should pay Asorah Zehuvim, 10 gold coins, for robbing him of the mitzvah. And Afloh asks a simple question. How do you attach a price tag to a mitzvah? What do you mean, 10 zehuvim? What's 10 gold coins for the value of a mitzvah? And that floor there lays down his yesoid. Again, this is his opinion. And that floor says, most interestingly, the truth is, if the other person would have protested and would have said, you know, 10 zehuvim, it's worth a million, then you know what? Then the mitzvah is worth a million. That floor says that the value of the mitzvah is what it's worth to you. It's a sort of a frightening thought, because then maybe to many of us it means that our mitzvahs may not be worth all that much, because if we're willing to give up mitzvahs for little things, you have just labeled, you have just evaluated, and you have shown what that mitzvah means to you. So if someone is doing a particular mitzvah, and for $25, right, he decides, let me abandon the mitzvah and go make the $25, you have just shown that $25 is worth to you more than the mitzvah, that that's the value of your mitzvah. So the flaw says it becomes very, very subjective. The truth is, we determine the value of our mitzvahs. So if that man would have protested and said 10 is not enough, he said, you know what, then it would not have been enough. But being the accepted, the 10 duvim, so to him it seemed that that's okay, it's a worthwhile compensation, and that's fine. The famous story that Rav Zevin used to say regarding this issue, he used to tell a story about a man who had a daughter who was up in age, and it was time for her to get married. However, with someone who could not afford to marry off his daughter. So he goes to the Rebbe, he goes to the upper roof, and he goes to the Rebbe and he says, Rebbe, he says, have rachmonis, he says, help me out, I have a daughter to marry her off, or give me an etzah. The Rebbe says to you, he says, how much do you need? I need to marry off your daughter. And the man says, I need 1,000 rubles, and I only have 1 ruble, and I need 1,000. So the Rebbe says, listen, Lech L'Sholem, he says, I give you a bracha, he says, it's go in peace, the first business deal that comes your way, just do it. That's it. Don't ask any questions. The first business deal that comes your way, you do it. So he comes to a hotel and he sees very big business people sitting around the table, people whose business involves diamonds, and they have all types of diamonds. They're valuing, looking at this diamond, the value of this diamond, all these diamonds. And he walks over to the table, and they can see that he's no person, he's no diamond dealer. You see, this is with the tattered clothing and so on. They say, what are you looking at? They're asking him. He says, maybe you want to buy some diamonds? No, that's the first business deal. Okay, he says, yes. So he says to him, well, how much money do you have? He says, 1 ruble. 1 ruble, he wants to buy diamonds. So 1 ruble, they all begin to laugh and begin to mock him. So one of the business people said, I have a good business deal for you that I can sell you, he says, for 1 ruble. He says, my oilam haba, he says. My oil and my boy, I can sell you for 1 ruble. You want to buy it? That's a joke. So, you remember the Rebbe said? The Rebbe said, whatever deal they offer me, he says, I should take it. He says, agreed. He says, I'm going to buy your oil and my boy for 1 ruble. However, he said, he was smart enough, he says, I want it in writing. You make a contract, you are selling to me your oil and my boy, all of your oil and my boy, for the sake of 1 ruble. And they laughed and said, ah, this is a good joke and very nice. Ah, look, this guy says, I owe him my boss. I sold him my boss for 1 ruble. Fine. This is what happened. Lamaisa, the Eid comes home and he tells his wife the whole story, what happened. Really, what went on in the day? He says, yeah, he says, this guy, he says, this Eid come on. He says, yes, this person, he says, Yitzlach is someone that has no mazel. He says, he wants to come to a dealing with business deals, diamonds, a very important situation. He comes around here, says, you know what, he says, guess what I did to him? I sold my olam haba for a ruble. He gave me his 1 ruble that he had, he says, to buy my olam haba. And he begins to laugh. And his wife turns very serious. She says, you sold your olam haba. You know something? I don't want to be married to a person who has no share in the world to come. So I don't want to live, I can't live with you like that. I want to get. I'm not going to live with a husband who has no chelik olam haba. She says, what do you want me to do? I want you to go after that yid, try to find him, and buy it back. So now you can imagine what happens. So he goes after that yid. Finally, he finds him, and he says to him, remember that deal that we made was just a joke? He said, not a joke. He takes up the paper. He said, look, there's sign over here. So you gave me oil, my boy. He says, so what do you want? So I have to buy it back. He says, it's not for sale. He says, you know what? Look, you bought it for 1 ruble. I'll give you 100 rubles. He said, no. He goes up to 200 rubles. No. Finally, he says, how much do you want for it? 1,000 rubles. That's what you need to marry off my daughter. And that's what it was. He gave him the 1,000 rubles to buy back. So he sold it for 1 ruble, and he had to buy it back for 1,000. Okay? His wife decides to live with him. Fine. You rectify the situation. The wife wanted to understand what's going on. So she goes to the Rebbe and says to the Rebbe, says, is this fair? This fair? He says, my husband, you made a mistake. Okay, you have to pay for your mistakes. But look, he sold his oil and haba for 1 ruble. Is it fair that now that he has to pay 1,000 rubles to get it back? And the Rebbe said, at the time that he sold his oil and haba for 1 ruble, it wasn't worth more, because your oil and haba is worth as much as you value it. So it wasn't worth more. It was a fair deal. When you understood your oil and haba is worth more, 1,000, now it's worth 1,000. the olam haba, the value in your schar of your mitzvah depends how much it's worth to you. So we really attach the labels and the figure to our mitzvahs, and in fact to our olam haba. Just want to mention the very thing. This is a very interesting psychological way of thinking, which we don't realize this. And this is something who came up with this was the Imre Emes. And listen to this. I think we can apply this all in our own lives. No matter what madrega we're in, but a year of the Shoyim Atari Mitzvahs will understand this on any level. And he said as follows. He said, "Have a mechashev hefted mitzvah keneged tzchora." You know what it means when you try to evaluate mitzvahs? He says, put it in this perspective. He says, look, go over to a yid. Go over to an observant yid and say to him, I don't want you to put on tefillin today. I'll give you, he said, $1 million. Think of it. Would you agree not to put on tefillin for $1 million? A real observant yid would not do that. Would never. Give me $1 million. I would not agree not to put on tefillin, he says, even for $1 million. So the Ger Rebbe said, so think about it. For the mitzvah of tefillin, you would lose $1 million. So now when you do put on tefillin, you made $1 million. Think how happy you have to be. You don't realize, really, how much that mitzvah means to you. And in the Chashiv, think about this way, he says. Because in fact, if someone would come up to you and say, I'm offering you a tremendous amount of money not to put on tefillin, you would never do it. You'd never sell it. You'd do it azach. You wouldn't do it. So outright, it's amazing to say that. Don't put on film here. You would not do it. So now, when you do put on film, you realize what you're getting. You're getting something that's really worth $1 million to you. So looking from that perspective, you have a new understanding, a new way of evaluating that which is really important to us, but not realizing it, and not thinking about it. That's what it means to have a mechashev, hefted mitzvah keneged tzchor, in truth, what the schar of our mitzvahs are. So we continue now, let's go back to Ramchal. Again, Ramchal is telling us that we have to know how to think and how to look at things, and he says we should take advice from people who really have conquered their Yetzer Hara, people who were successful in their careers of managing their Yetzer Hara, because Ramchal was Madaik, he emphasized when the Gemara said, Al ken yoimu ha-moishlim, boyu chesh ben moishlim means ha-moishlim b'yitzram. People who are successful, they know how to look at the world and put it in proper perspective. We think we see it right. So therefore we have to look at people who are successful and to receive guidance and to become educated by them. And he gives the example of how otherwise we can go through this world thinking we know what we're looking at and you don't. And this is such a practical example. And let's take a look at it. We all have, sir, once in a while have gone through this, and let's take a look what he says. He says, Lomo Zadayman. He says, our lives can be easily compared, he says, Ligan Hamavuka. Imagine if you have a garden which is like in the shape of a maze. You know what a maze is. You have all these puzzles, right? Trying to figure out how to get to the starting point, and then you have to get to the end. Right? So you have a maze. So many different roads you can take. So imagine, says Ramchal, that if you have a garden, it's called Gan Hamavuka. Gan Hamavuka means a confusing garden. It means it's a maze. Huhagan Hanatua Letzchoik. And this is the type of gardens, you know, that was very customary in those days, that they used to plant it for the sake of amusement, because they used to challenge people. Okay, here, go to the garden, start over here, you have to end up over there. See if you can find your way. This was done very commonly for amusement. That's what he says, Letzchoik. How you do it, Eitzel Hasorin. It was quite a familiar type of a, sort of a game, you know, among people of nobility. These are the types of games that they used to play. They used to construct for themselves gardens, right, which are constructed in the shape of a maze for the sake of amusement. The way it's constructed, he says, is shahanatiyos asuyos kisolim kisolim. He says, this type of a garden you have, that basically you have that the hedges are arranged like walls, ubineyem, and in between you have shvilim rabim nevuchim umoirovim. And you have many different paths, confusing paths, interconnected, right? Kulam daimim zelazeh. And they all look one and the same, which is very confusing. You don't know which is really the right path to take. Right? So you have many, many paths between the hedges. They all seem to be okay, but obviously you're going to find out sooner or later the wrong path. So now, so he says, Vatachlis, and the purpose of all of these is, Vatachlis Bam, the purpose of going through this maze is Lahagia Elachsadra Acha Shebem Tzom. It's arrive at a certain porch, at a high stage, let's say a gazebo of some kind, which is in the middle. So that's the object. The object is to go through the maze to find the right path in this particular garden and to be able to reach the gazebo, which is somewhere in the middle. Now, however, this is the goal, as we mentioned. However, there are many of these paths. Some of them, he says, Yisharim Umagiyim Be'emes Alachsadri. Some of these paths, when you walk through the maze, some of them will lead you directly, right, to the porch, to the stage, to the gazebo. But some of the others, Majgim Es Odom, they are deceptively leading the person in a different direction. Marchikim Oysa Memeno. And in fact, they distance the person further away. So now the object and the challenge is to find the direct route, the appropriate route, to get to the Achsadra. So he says, now the nature of this situation is as follows. Common knowledge, what is the nature? The nature is like this. The Omnam Ahoylach Ben Ashvilim. So the person who walks along these paths, the person who's walking through the path, Hu Lo Yuchal Lirois V'Ladas Klal. A person who's walking along the path, he's not capable of seeing or knowing at all if he's taking the right route or not. Im hu bishvil. Bishvil means shvil, not bishvil. Bishvil. Means if he's in the right path, or he's in the mistaken path. He call him shavim, because to him it's all the same. So the person himself is doing the walking, right? And doing the choosing, he certainly doesn't know till the end. He does not know which is the right path or the wrong path. Because to him they all look alike, vein hefesh b'neihem, right? And to him who is observing it, that they look all alike, le'ein haroya oisam. To the one who looks at it, he does not know. Unless he had prior experience and a keen eye, otherwise you would not be able to know and find your way. Every path looks the same. Except, as we said, except if he had already experienced, he said, Shekvar nichnasbo. He already once went through it. Now, if you went once through it, and you have a keen eye, you might remember. No, this is the right way, this is the wrong way. Now, I'm going to make a right turn, this will come open. Right? So if you've been through it in the past, if you have a keen eye, good memory, then, only then you'll know. You'll arrive to the Tachlis Huach Sadrin, which is the gazebo. So the person walking through, he's certainly going to be confused. He doesn't know the right way. They all look alike. How do you know which one to take? Imagine there's a person who is standing on top of the gazebo. He's standing, and being that he's elevated, he can see. He's able to see the right way. Now when he notices someone trying to find his way, and he directs him, he says, you know, take this one. And when you come to the corner, go over here, and then go over here. Someone who is standing on the achsadra, who's already there, who had already reached the goal, and he can see from his vantage point, he sees which is the right derech, which is not the right derech. He certainly can direct the confused person to find the right way. Says Ramchal, v'hineh hoyim et kvar alo achsadra. Now he says, a person who is standing already on that achsadra, on that stage, on that gazebo, hu roye kol hadrochim lefono. Based from where his place of standing, he's capable of seeing everything. He sees all the paths. U'mabchim beinu emitiyim akoizim. And therefore he clearly is able to discern which are the correct ones, which are the false ones, vuhu yokoi lahazir soyokimbom. And certainly he's able to warn people walking. He can tell them, zeha derech l'chuba. This is the right way, this is the wrong way. So Ramchal says, the only thing that's missing is that you have to trust the person. In other words, if you know the person or you believe him, you have no reason not to distrust him. So then, of course, you're going to listen to him. So he says, v'inemi sheyirtze lahamiloi. Any person who is willing to place his trust on the person who is standing on this gazebo, so then yagi alamokin hamiyut. So then, of course, he'll reach his destination. But if someone decides, I'm not going to believe the person right who's standing on the achsadra, I'm not going to believe him. The year to lalechad achrayim, he said to him, no, I'd rather go through my own instincts. Take me. Well, you know what? Vaday she yishoyer oived v'lo yagi elov. He'll surely remain lost and he'll fail to reach it. Those are the odds. The odds are against him. Says Ramchal, this is our spiritual life in this world. This world, every day, every path we take, we're in a maze. We're running through a maze. We think we're on the right road. We like to believe we're on the right road. But we're confused. All the roads seem to appear the same. They seem to be okay. But someone who already made it, someone who reached the destination, someone already able to make some sense, someone who's able already to see and recognize what is right and what is wrong, what is dangerous, where are the holes, where are the pitfalls, where you have to be careful, Where are the stumbling blocks? Someone who made it already. He's already high. He's able to see. He's looking down. So he says, Kein Adov Razeh, the same thing exactly in your spiritual life. Misha Dayin Lemoshal Bitzroy. Lemoshal Bitzroy. A person who has not yet ruled over his Yetzer Hara, over his evil inclination, who betoich hashvilim. One has to imagine you're in the middle of a maze of many, many paths. You have many paths before you, confusing paths. And you will not be able to differentiate between the right path and the wrong path. On the other hand, those who already have conquered their evil inclination, means they already have made it. They have overcome. And they have succeeded. If you put some quotations, this is the moshul, this is the parable. Those who already have reached like that stage, those who have reached the achsadri, shekvayotu min hashvilim, they have already left the paths. Vero kol adrochim leneim bibir, now they have clearly seen all the routes before them. Heim yecholim leyoetz, they are the ones that are capable and they are competent. And they are the ones who are the appropriate people to give advice, lemisha yirtzel lishmoya, to one who wants to listen. That's also, by the way, this phrase is a very important phrase. You have to want to listen. You can hear the best information being imparted to you, but if you're not willing to listen, it's not going to at all. It's not going to make a dent. It's important that you have to want to listen. And as is mentioned in Sforma Gdoshim, if you want to listen, then you have the shiata dishmaya, that you will find someone to give you the right advice. But if you're not ready to listen, then you won't even recognize it when it's there before you. So when you have already this person who is a Moshel B'Yitzray, he already went through the paths. He knows already the right ones from the wrong ones. So now he says, you can take advice. These are the people to take advice from. Va'aleim tzrichen onu lahamin. And we have to place our trust in them. And a matter of fact, that is what Chazal are telling us. This, in fact, the omnom, and matter of factly, he says, Mahi ho'etze shemnoisim lonu. And what, in fact, will be the etze that these accomplished people are going to tell us? Boyu cheshboim, keep a cheshbon, calculate whatever you do, make sure, think, is it worthwhile before you do it? Maybe too late after you've done it, but boyu cheshboim, make the cheshbon. Boyu nechashiv cheshboino shel olam, go and make a cheshbon, evaluate the balance sheet of the world. And again, let's remember what Rav Lapian said we had last week, Rav Lapian's interpretation of cheshboino shel olam, evaluate the balance sheet of the world. Why the world's balance sheet? It's your own balance sheet, because whatever we do impacts on the whole world. If we elevate ourselves spiritually, then in fact we add spirituality, we add ruchnis, we elevate, we lift the world with us. And if we fall, it's not just ourselves, we also cause the world to be lower than it was before. So the achrayus and the burden is not just of our actions, of what we become, but as a matter of fact how it impacts the world at large. These are the people to listen to, nisu, because they already went through it, they experienced it. The ro'u v'yodu, they saw it and they learned. Shezel avadoi hu aderech v'amiti, that this alone is the true way. Lahagia ho'odom el ha'toivah shu mevakesh, this is the only true way that a person can be able to reach the goodness that he attempts to find. V'loi zu lazeh, in no other way. So ultimately, Ramchal therefore summarizes as he closes this perik, and he says, so if you summarize what we have learned, Klola Shildover, so far, because then comes Perik Dalet. He's still, even in the next Perik that we start with Hashem, next time, the next Perik also is another Perik still in Zahiris, in Vigilance. This is the third Perik in Vigilance, in Zahiris. Klola Shildover, he says. So to summarize, a person always has to always keep his mind open. A person always has to keep his mind open. Bizman kivuloi, and as a matter of fact, he says, set aside some time, these boidadoi, within yourself, when you're by yourself, no distractions. Mahu hader chwamiti. Take time to reflect upon yourself. What is defined? As we said, definition. Take time, set aside time to define what is the appropriate path of yichoika Torah according to the laws of the Torah. Shodom tzorach leilachboi. Right? That a man has to follow in that way. And then, once you have defined, and you have studied what is right and what is wrong, now when you do something, evaluate that against information that you have already discerned. That's step number two. And then Yovel his bainim, that will bring him further to reflect upon his deeds. Al Maisa, Do they match up to the information, right, that he had absorbed, to the definitions that he set aside for himself? Because in this manner, if you follow this derech, if you follow this path, vaday shiyeh lo nokel, this will make it certainly easier, letaher mikol ro, to purify himself from all wrongdoing, uleyasher kol derochov, and to rectify all of his ways, if you follow this advice. And finally concludes by bringing two psukim to support this idea. And as the posuk says, the first posuk is in Mishlei, the posuk says, Shlomo HaMelech says, Pales magel raglecho. Shlomo HaMelech says, a person has to align the course of your feet. You don't just walk. You have to align your feet. Pales magel raglecho. You have to align your feet. And then, v'chol drachecho yikoinu, and then your ways will be corrected. Your ways will be corrected, but if your feet are aligned, if your feet are not aligned, then your ways will not be corrected. So, Pales magel raglecho, make sure that your feet are aligned. And v'yoymer, and also we find in Echo, the Novi says, Nach tesod drachenu v'nach koira. Let us seek out our ways, right? Nach tesod means to seek out, v'nach koira means and to examine. V'neshuv ad Hashem and return to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, even as we see these two psukim, you see that Ramchal brings down, we already mentioned many times, there is no redundancy, and there is no, when he brings an extra posik, it's not just to bring just another posik. But every posik, and everything in the posik is something that adds something to a Ramchal, to the message of the Ramchal. First of all, you look at the Lashon of Ramchal again. Ramchal says here in the last few lines, so if you take my advice, he said, Ki al yidezeh, again, vadai shiyeh loy, nokel, it'll be easier, letaher mikol ra, that's the first thing, to purify, right, all of your wrongdoings, uleyasher kol drachov, right, uleyasher kol drachov, and also to rectify your ways. So he says two things, letaher mikol ra, uleyasher kol drachov. What's the difference between these two? So one opinion is, it's mentioned Taki in some of the Mepharshim under Ramchal, the sefer called Pikayin, which is just, yes, remember what Ramchal told us, based upon what the Gemara said. Ramchal said this in this perik, even though Indo would have been better, right? Even though Gemara concluded it would have been better that man is not created, but rather being created, but now that you're created, you have a responsibility. And two things, what is responsibility? Yefash pesh b'masav, to examine your deeds, and yemash mesh, to probe your deeds. And the Ramchal told us, what is the difference between yefash pesh and yemash mesh? Yefash pesh means to get rid of the evil doing. That means to examine what's good and what's bad, right? To get rid of the bad. And yamashmesh means even to examine the good deeds, because even when you're doing something good, right, there's no end to the higher level, right? There's good and there's better and there's even better in the manner of how the one does the simcha and so on. So yifashmesh is examining what's evil, what's bad in your maisim, and yamashmesh is even to probe the good deeds, as one would feel, right, a cloth to see how good it is. That's yamashmesh, to feel it out, right? So being that there are two objectives, yifashmesh, examine what's bad, yamashmesh, to probe what's good. So it suggested that this is what Ramchal is saying here. Letaher mikol ra, that is keneged yefashpesh, to get rid of the bad. Letaher mikol ra, to purify yourself from what's bad. That is the responsibility of yefashpesh. And then he says, liyasher kol derocha, to make things straight, which means that even the good things, because you have to probe them to make sure they're as straight as it can be, right? They're straight, and they're straighter, and they're even straighter, right? There's no end to how straight something can be. So, Latay Mekora, that is the responsibility, that's the achrayus of Yefash Pesh, and Liyasher called Rochov, that's going on Yemash Mesh. So it's not just the redundancy of just saying same words, same idea, but really trying to emphasize something. And I want to mention, very interestingly, that the Brisker Rav Revelvel, and the Chedush Riz Al HaTorah, Revelvel, he brings down, as a matter of fact, the Ramchal's interpretation before, on yefashpesh and yamashmesh. Yefashpesh means again to examine. That's to examine the bad, right? And yamashmesh means to probe, to check out even the good deeds. So interesting thing. So Rav Velvel says that these two ideas, we just explained it in the words of the Ramchal, letaher mikol ra, and we said liyasher kol drachov. Rav Velvel uses it on the posik that Ramchal brings. In other words, what's the last posik that Ramchal concluded this perik? Nach b'so drachenu v'nach hakoira. Right, nachbasa means that what? That we should examine our ways, and then we have v'nach koira. Right, to examine, to seek out, and examine v'noshiva Hashem. So Rav Velvel says nachbasa means. He said nachbasa means that pishbush, Search, examine. Nachnasa, find out what you did. Find out what you did. Check out your ma'asim. Find out all the things that should have been good and they're bad. That's what nachnasa. We're talking about searching, searching. What are you searching for? You're searching is for the bad. You want to weed out the bad. So the nachnasa is referring to weeding out the bad. And in contrast, or corresponding to mishmush, probing the good deeds, even the ma'asim after the nachkoira, investigate. Nachkoira means to investigate. What does investigate mean? Investigate it. See how good it is. That's the nachkoira. So nachpesa is connected pishpush, right? Yifash pesh b'maso, and then the nachkoira goes on, again probing even the ma'asim tovim. So again, these are the two concepts, and the way Rav learns it into the pasuk itself between nachpesa and the nachkoira. What's interesting thing is that on Rosh Hashanah, the pasuk says tikku b'chayde shofar, that we should blow shofar. Right? On Rosh Hashanah. Tikku b'chayde shofar. So if you look at the Medrash, in Parashas Emor, the Medrash breaks it up into two. Chaydish and Kama and shofar. Tikku b'chaydish, chaydish means chitshu maseichem. Renew your ways. It's Rosh Hashanah. It's a new year. You turn a new page. Right? Start a new book. A new sefer. Author a new sefer. You are the author. Your life is your book. Be mechadish. Tikku b'chaydish, chaydish means what? Chitshu maseichem. Renew your actions. Shofar means shapru maseichem. Beautify your actions. What is the difference between chitshu maseichem, renew your ways, and between beautifying your ways? So in the Pirish Eitz Yosef on the Medrash, he says chitshu maseichem means do a lot of mitzvahs. That's what he wants to teach you. Chitshu maseichem means renew your ways, means to keep doing a lot of mitzvahs. Shapru maseichem means to do tshuva on the averis. Make your ways, beautify your ways, means do tshuva on your averis. The truth is, the way we're learning, totally different interpretation. Chitshu maseichem, when we're talking about chitshu maseichem, that is referring to do is to renew them. Renew them, those things even that you are doing, to renew them. What do you mean to renew them? Renew them means to say it, or you can look at it this way. You know, renew. Renew means to something, do anew. Now that which was bad, do it now new. Do it now the right way. Shapru means beautify. What is beautifying? There's no one to beautify. I can have a nice wall, but I paint it to make it even nicer. Then I can do a different color and add another color. That's doing better. So chitshu maseichem might be referring to the sur merah. That's the aspect of yifashpesh, one might say. That's called chitshu maseichem. Make, turn over a new leaf. You become a new person. And shapru maseichem means to beautify. Means you're doing okay, but you know what? You can do it nicer. You can do it better, right? You can do. Somebody can do a job. Then comes along somebody else, does the same job, does it much nicer. Both did something positive, yet one did it better. In our life of mitzvahs, we can always do better. We can beautify it more. That's called shapru maseichem. So it's chitshu maseichem. It's totally new. They're turning over a new leaf completely. And then you have shapru maseichem, really beautifying. They're taking the ma'asim tovim and checking them out, even doing it on a better way. So regarding what the Ramchal tells us, that the bottom line is that we have to be careful. And we have to basically, as he says, to check out, first of all, to make definitions. Have definitions between what's tov and what's ra. And then Ramchal says, then when we do something, match your actions together with your definitions to see if they match up or not. So I want to tell you something. There, one of the descendants, the grandchildren of the Chofetz Chaim, was a woman by the name of Mrs. Frieda Gudvich. Not one of the most well-known names, but there was a woman by the name. Mrs. Frieda Gudvich was a granddaughter of the Chofetz Chaim, and she once comes to visit her grandfather. She comes to visit the great Chofetz Chaim, and she tells the Chofetz Chaim with great pride that she was very successful to learn seven languages. It's a non-maiser, seven languages. The Chofetz Chaim said to her, seven languages? Why do you have to know seven languages? Well, one language is for here, one language to know in case I visit that country. She may never visit that country, but maybe that. And then another language in a totally different country. Seven different countries. Seven languages. The Chofetz Chaim responded and said, make sure that you learn the language that they speak in Olam Haba. It's a special language they speak there. You know that language? That language. One day you're going to... There you're definitely going to go. With all the other places, all these other countries of the seven languages, you may not ever visit them. But if you found it important to study those languages, Olam Haba has its own language. There's a certain sprach. The spirit and language that they speak over there. Make sure that you know the language. One day, we're all going to come there. But imagine if you don't know the language. You're lost. Make sure you know the language, he says. There's a certain language that they speak in Olam Haba. Now's the time to learn the language. The course is now. This is when you take the course. The better you know the language, the more Olam Haba will mean something to you. Interesting thing is, there's a sefer called Meir Eina Yisroel, which wrote about all aspects of the Chofetz Chaim. It's called Meir Eina Yisroel, and Chelek Aleph it is. So Rav Tzvi Herz Zaks, he writes about the Chofetz Chaim used to literally make a cheshbon hanefesh every day. He took stock of how his day went. In his younger years, he used to walk sort of like to the outskirts of Radin, to the outskirts of the town. He went to the outskirts of the town, went in some sort of a forest, wherever it is. And nobody's there with himself. And that's where he used to do it. But the later years of his life, he couldn't do it. He had no koyach. So he used to go up to the attic. And in the attic, made it in the attic. And this Rav Tzvi Herz Zaks writes, and he said that once the Mashgiach of Mir, Rabbi Yeruchim, happened to be in town, and he knew of the Chofetz Chaim's practice, so he went stealthily, unbeknownst to the Chofetz Chaim, to listen behind the door. He's standing on the steps there, how the Chofetz Chaim is making. He could not believe Chofetz Chaim was making Chesed Nefesh, if he would be the greatest Baal Averus, he says. And the Mashgiach, he says, Mamish, he said, he fainted on the steps, and Alpines, he had someone standing next to him, he hadn't held him, he would have fallen down all the steps. Hearing the Chesed Nefesh, he said, the Chofetz Chaim. To have a shtickle idea of how this went like, so Tzvi Herz actually writes as follows. First of all, it's just amazing what he says. I mean, you know what a minute of time means? He says, it took like this. You know how long? Between 2.5 hours, and 4 hours. It's an amazing thing. What did he cheshbon so much? It took him between 2.5 hours, 3 to 4 hours. Where did he find so much time in a day? You have to understand what we're talking about here. When Rav Naftali Trop, the Garnat, became seriously ill, he was Yeshiva and Rabin, famous Garnat, right, whose Torah is learned in all the in Olam HaYeshivas. When Naftali became sick, they tried whatever possible in order to be able to affect the Refu Shalem. They said a lot of Tehillim and they were mispowered, they did everything in their power. Situation didn't look too good. So some of the Talmidim took it upon themselves that they're going to donate life. How are you going to donate? Then you say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, say, Baruch Shalom, I'm ready to give up, he says, a week of my life and donate it to Rav Naftali. In other words, whatever time I have in this world, I'm ready to give up a week, a month. And so they made an appeal. They made an appeal, not for money. They made an appeal, donate life, literally. Give up time. Give up weeks, months. Give up. To extend the life of Rav Naftali. And kach v'kach, did beloved Talmidim ready to do it? Each one knows it's coming like to an appeal. You know, someone gives $10, someone gives chai, somebody gave a week, somebody gave a month, somebody gave 6 months. Well, whatever one felt he's ready to give. That's the amount of time they gave. So they came, and one person had, I don't call it a chutzpah, but took the courage, and he comes to Chofetz Chaim. And he said to Chofetz Chaim, Rebbe, we're making an appeal to donate some time of your life for Naftali. We would like you also, if possible, give some time. How much are you willing? How much are you willing? And Chaim thinks. Maybe this was his Rosh Yeshiva. Naftali was his Rosh Yeshiva. No one loved him more than the Chofetz Chaim. And he thinks. Says, okay, I'm ready. 1 minute. That's all. Can't give more. You want a minute of time? How precious life is. 1 minute. That's what I can give. Can't give more. 1 minute. You know, if 1 minute means something to you, if you do something with that minute, it's a lot. But if you waste time and time and time, it doesn't mean much. Yeah, I mean a week, I'm giving a month. I mean, what does that mean to you? But if every minute is a productive minute, yes, koin eloma b'sho'achat, in one moment, you can buy olam haba if you do the right thing, in one moment, then the value of 1 minute cannot be evaluated. There's no amount. We have no idea what it means, 1 moment, 1 minute, how precious life is. Yet, he came to make a cheshbon hanefesh, this is what he used, 2.5 hours on a daily basis. And this is what he did. And he said, the derech of the Chofetz Chaim is, when he made a cheshbon hanefesh, he would say it loudly, he wouldn't do it mentally, he would say it loudly, that if you would not see, you would think he's talking to someone. So he would speak it out very clearly, and you would imagine that he actually had somebody else in the room. says Hoya Yoshev, he says Chav Chaim, he says Hoya Ki Ilu Deinu Dvarim Mchaveiro She Yoshev Lemuloi. He was speaking Ki Ilu, someone was there. Well, Mishal Yoda, someone who didn't know Hoya Choshev She Chav Chaim Yoshev Imoid Echad Yad Ashulchan. He was in the Chav Chaim and sitting with one more person, and they were talking between each other. Af Echad Loi Helo Bedato She Chav Chaim Medaber Latzmai. This is what Rav Zaks is writing. Now one person thought the Chofetz Chaim is talking to himself, unless he saw he's alone. This is the way Chesed ben Hanefesh went. Mipnei shoy medaber hakol b'derech shaila tshuva. You see, he would ask a question and he would answer it. So if you ask a question, usually you're asking a question, there's somebody, you're asking a question, there's a question and answer. But you yourself, very unusual, you're asking yourself the question, you're giving yourself the answer. Not the usual way to do it. So he says, v'kach hoye seder viduya. This is the way it went. Hoyoyle l'aliyah, he went up to the attic, and he used to depict verbally, this is the way it's going to look in Shemayim, he says. When I come up, he says, when I come up to the heavenly court, he says, after my 120 years are up, he says, they're going to ask me, Shlomo Meir, his name was Shlomo Meir, Shlomo Meir, mo ata oim ral kach, what do you say about this? And I'm going to have to give my opinion. And what do you say about this? And whatever I say, it's going to be evaluated. Machrizim, they make an announcement, let the prosecutor come. Let's evaluate what you have done, what you think about. Call Misha Delachoy, if anybody knows something that is an indictment, Yovay, let all the witnesses come, if there's any witnesses. But obviously it means, because everything that you do is recorded. Everything that you do from the moment that you were born, everything that you do is recorded. Now we can understand it. We have tape recorders, we know all these modern technology. As was already said, more likely than not, all of this was created because maybe we should learn that if these things can be recorded, you know, between man to man, you can imagine there's a much more sophisticated situation. You can understand that things are recorded away in Shemayim for sure. And you hear the Chofetz Chaim, how he starts to count, and he mentions this Aveira, and he mentions this Aveira. Matzchil ispar Aveira ve'oid Aveira. Magia hu le'eser, he's up to 10 Aveiras, he's up to 100 Aveiras. What do you think those Aveiras are? Can you imagine what kind of Aveiras does he have? And those Aveiras are? He said, Iker hu averes hoyu al I simchas hamitzvos. When I did a mitzvah, I didn't have enough simcha. That's how he indicted himself. You think he did an avera? To him was an avera when he did a mitzvah. There was not enough simcha. Or he says, mitzvah zu, he says, loy osa b'simcha. Mitzvah zu loy gomra b'shleimus. Or this mitzvah, I didn't do it to perfection. I might have been able to do it a little better. Maybe a little bit more kavona. Mitzvah acheres, or maybe I did a different mitzvah, chosa boker tasahavo. Maybe it lacked some of the full love that I should have had for that mitzvah. Maybe my full neshama was not in it, as it could have been. This is the nature of the mitzvahs, of his averes, how he evaluated his mitzvahs. This is Chofetz Chaim. This is the idea. A person has, of course, then feel that a mitzvah deserves to be performed in a certain way. So again, this is all part of step number one, definition. What's considered good, what's considered not good. The person, though, is satisfied with mediocrity, so that's fine, it's good. But in your own life, you're not satisfied with mediocrity. You want the house to look exactly the way you want it, and you want the car to be the brand that you want it to be, and so on. And the vacation should be the way, particular way you want it to be, and a certain spot, and you want the weather to be okay, and everything else like that goes along with it. And you want it cheap for free, you also want that also. That's the other part. So that's all you want. So this is the chayv you have. So when it comes to mitzvahs, why are you all of a sudden satisfied? It's okay. Did the mitzvah. No. You're serving Hashem. Serving the Melech Malach HaMelechim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a chayv to be made. Define what's good. Don't take anything less. Don't accept anything less. This should be good. And then when you do it, match up. Was I successful today? Did I do the mitzvah the way I believe it should be done? The way I truly believe it should be done? Finally, what we conclude is, you know, in 1890, Rosh Yeshiva, the great yeshiva in Volozhin, who was the Netziv, the great yeshiva in Volozhin, was the mother yeshivas in Lithuania. The Netziv, it was in 1890, he brings his son, Chaim Berlin. Chaim Berlin, as you know, was the son of the Netziv, who was a prominent Rav in Moscow. And the Netziv brings his son, he brings him from Moscow to come to Volozhin in order that he gives shiurim in the yeshiva Volozhin. So he takes his son, he summons his son to come from Moscow, Reb Chaim Berlin, and to say shiur in Volozhin. The yeshiva was going through, as you know, a little bit about Volozhin, was going through at that period a very difficult period, because many, many decrees or edicts were issued by the then hostile Russian government, which interfered more and more with the running of the yeshivas, and the government ultimately demanded that no learning of Talmud could take place at that time. Also, secular studies, especially the Russian language, became a major part of the curriculum, and they recognized what's going on. So sadly, in 1892, as is known, in 1892, the Netziv was forced to close the doors of the yeshiva for the final time. It's a very, very tragic period, as is known. Netziv closed the yeshiva. It was 1892. What happened to Chaim Berlin? Originally, he was a rav in Moscow. Right? His father told him to come to Volozhin. Now the yeshiva is closed. So he goes back to being a rav. So he goes back and he becomes a rav, you know, in Kabrin. And remains there a rav for 3 years. At the end of the time, at the end of 3 years, Reb Chaim Berlin, he shocks all of his contemporaries by announcing that he accepted a small rabbinical position in a small town that was almost devoid of any Yiddishkeit. He says the town was located in Finland. It was called Jalisbetgrad, which, by the way, today is part of Russia. And he abandons a very important, prestigious rabbinical position for a very small one. A very, very small one. Very few people understood why a rabbi of his stature, Chaim Berlin, was a non-godel. He said, we'd gone to an area where so few Jews were there, with no commitment hardly to any Torah mitzvahs. Why would he go? Why would he leave a respectable position and to go to a place with very few Jews who are committed? Why would he do that for? On his way, he stops in Brisk, on his way to this new rabbinical position, to this new post. So he stops in Brisk with a great Reb Chaim Brisker, a great Reb Chaim Brisker, made, by the way, a Sudas Preder, which means a Suda, a farewell gathering in his house, Reb Chaim Berlin. Interesting thing, at the Suda, Reb Chaim Berlin overheard some of the guests questioning the wisdom of Reb Chaim Berlin that he takes a position. There was no Shabbos, there's no Kashrus, there is no semblance of Yiddishkeit. Why would Reb Chaim Berlin go there? And he overheard that. Reb Chaim Berlin responded, and this is what he said. He said to them, he says, you're right. What you're saying is true. There's very little Yiddishkeit, he says, where I'm going. But the question I ask myself is, why did I go into Rabbonis? Why did I go into the rabbinate? So he said like this. If you deem, he says, Rabbonis, the rabbinate, as a means for compensation, he says, in Olam Hazeh, and of course it makes sense to be a rav, he says, a prestigious kehillah, prestigious community, he says, a place like Volozhin, a place like Brisk, a place like Ponovich, he says, where you can give shiurim, you can learn Torah. That's Olam Hazeh. Olam Hazeh is when a great Rosh Yeshiva, a great rav can give a shiur. That's Olam Hazeh, not Olam Haba. That's Olam Hazeh. I go to Brisk, I go to Volozhin, he says. I go to Ponovich, he says. A place where you find Yidden who are learning Torah, totally involved, he says, observant people. There are spiritual pleasures to be had, he says. But if, he says, a person deems, he says, the rabbinate toward a vehicle, toward achieving merit in Olam Haba, the future world, then a rav in Finland, he said, where, he says, if one yid, he says, closes his door on Shabbos, or if I influence one butcher to sell kosher meat, or if I get one family to be a Shomer Shabbos, or if I influence one child to go to yeshiva, such a rav, he says, will get more Olam Haba than any rav in a big city. That's why I go there. In other words, have a machashev, have to admit the knigat chora. You have to know how to make the cheshm. You have to know how to evaluate. You have to know how to calculate. And that, and these similar kinds of decisions come up every day in a person's life. And at least, we have the idea, and we know what our goals are. If we study, we try to define our goals. So then, there's Hashem, if we really want it, and we can to become successful and to be able to come closer and closer to be able to meet our goals, and nachas and shefa.